You're listening to It's All Dead, a podcast about the music we love and why we love it. I'm Kyle Hawk.
Welcome to It's All Dead. I'm Kyle Hawk, editor-in-chief at itsalldead.com. And you are listening to us probably on a Monday. I don't know. Right now it's Saturday, January 19th. And there's a lot of things going on in our world. The government's still in a partial lockdown. There's two Firefest documentaries. And Bryce Harper and Manny Machado still don't have a baseball team. And I bring up that last point because my guest today is Brock Benefiel, a fellow baseball fan. We're not going to talk about baseball today. Normally, we're doing this podcast a little bit earlier in the year. We're doing a little bit, you know, a few weeks into 2019. But past couple years, we've done a podcast on the handing out the title belt, like a wrestling match took place, and we're handing out the belt to the rapper that owned the year. We did it for 2016, 2017, and now it's time to look back at 2018 and figure out which rapper took home the title belt. But before we get into all that, Brock Benefiel, welcome back to the podcast room in my house.
Thank you so much for having me back. Excited to give out another title belt this year.
Yeah, I almost took a drink out of a beer that doesn't even open yet, so that's where I'm at right now. You know, I asked you if you wanted to do this podcast again. I feel like this is one of the ones that we have the most fun with. I mean, I know we've podcasted quite a bit, but this conversation to me has always been one of my favorite ones to have. What do you enjoy about it? What brings you back to do it again?
I think this is such a great exercise for rap music. I mean, the idea of giving out a title belt is so applicable to the genre. So this is one of the best. I think this is so much fun. This is such a fun thing to do, and it just it applies so well to some of the one of our favorite genres.
Yeah. So I'm going to dive right in. I'm going to hand out the title belt right now. You know, if there's one rapper that's really on the tip of everyone's tongue right now, one rapper who we're seeing more of than, you know, we probably ever imagined and having more discussions about in terms of his motivations and who he is. I mean, to me, we got to give the title belt to Ja Rule, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I mean, this is Ja season approaching, you know? Yeah.
All right. Well, that was a good podcast, and we'll see you next year. No, I'm just kidding. So you think that we both have picked the same person?
I do. I think
to take this year.
I think I do think this is a year where I personally had to think more about it, that there wasn't a kind of clear winner when I started to go through every artist. But I think when you start to look at the end of the equation, it's kind of clear who the winner is. So. Yeah.
And let's quickly, you know, if you haven't listened to our other podcasts on this, kind of talk a little bit about what it means. You know, there's always discussions about, like, who's the best rapper alive at any given point. And, like, nobody's going to argue that, like, even though Kendrick didn't put out an album per se, I mean, that was the Black Panther soundtrack that he kind of oversaw. But nobody's going to argue that, like, oh, there was a better rapper alive in 2018 than Kendrick Lamar. That's not what this conversation is. This conversation is more, who owned the year, both as an artist, culturally, who was in the middle of every conversation, who had the most cultural weight, the biggest impact in a given year. That's kind of how I view it. Just kind of like when I think of a year, like who do I see? Like whose name pops up in my mind the most? And that's kind of what this is. So 2017, last year, we did give it out to Kendrick Lamar. He put out Damn. I mean, again, I mean, an artist that is kind of at the height of his powers as a rapper right now, putting out what was arguably at the time his best album. The year before, we gave it out to Chance. You know, he had the Coloring Book mixtape. He opened the year with a verse on, you know, Kanye's Ultra Light Beam. It was just kind of a year where Chance was like at the epicenter of what hip hop meant. And so, like, when you think about it that way, I think it kind of makes clear a little bit more about what we're talking about. But so the interesting thing is the 2 years that we've done this, we both agreed on who it was. Right. And you think that we're going to agree this year.
I do.
Taking a look back, we were looking back just before we started this at, like, you know, if we go back further than before we started doing this podcast, who would we give it out to? So in that sense, we would have to go back to 2015. This started because of Complex did an article where they went, like, through, I think, the late 70s all the way up to 2017.
79, right?
Which is fascinating. I think that's what sparked this whole conversation.
Absolutely.
That we had.
Shout out to Complex.
They had Drake for 2015. You can certainly argue that. We both, I think, felt like Kendrick Lamar took 2015 because of To Pimp a Butterfly.
There's no doubt.
They have Nicki Minaj in 2014. It's an interesting pick, but I think both of us felt like Killer Mike or Run the Jewels as a collective kind of owned that year. And the further we get away from 2014, the more I feel that way because of what Run the Jewels was doing in that moment.
Right.
Like giving that album away and just kind of like the way they were kind of... They were a part of like where music consumption was going before people were fully ready for that in that moment. On top of the fact that it kind of came out of nowhere and was just such a great album that people weren't expecting.
And I think it mattered in a way that we didn't know if Killer Mike or LP's careers would matter in a mainstream way like that. And this is the thing that really brought all their entire careers together in a way that was kind of exciting.
Yeah. So I don't know how far back you want to go. I want to go through this quickly because I've got a lot of talking points for 2018, actually.
Yeah, we kind of agree. I mean, we were looking back at 2012 and 2013. Those are almost like Drake, Kendrick tie years because if you think about Take Care comes out in 2011 at the end of 2012 is when Good Kid, Mad City comes out. So you're wondering like, well, which year should it be credited for? But if you look at like Kendrick and Drake both had incredible 2012s, both had incredible 2013s. I think we gave the edge to Kendrick in 2013 just because his influence seemed to gain and his like consensus building seemed to gain the most momentum in 2013. We gave 2012 to Drake, but you could really flip either of those.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just kind of like a period where both of them were kind of coming into their own and kind of dominating the conversation in hip hop. 2011, the Complex article had Drake. We went with Kanye and Jay-Z because of Watch the Throne. Again, we're in agreement there. We're in agreement on a lot of this.
This is not exciting enough. We gotta find ways to disagree.
In 2010, we both agreed with Kanye.
Yeah. In 2009 was I said Jay-Z for Blueprint 3. Who was your pick for 2009?
Let me go back and look again.
Because you're just not as into Blueprint 3 as
I'm
I
not.
Am.
I there were a lot of great mixtapes that came out of Blueprint.
Right, but all bad albums. Like 2009 is just a bad album after bad album.
Yeah.
Like Gucci Mane's in there, you know, Drake's mixtape, which was really kind of probably the most dominant rap moment. But you know, at the point, Jay-Z was such a consensus.
What if
winner.
I said Kid Cudi?
I think that's he can win 2009.
Yeah,
but then that's another like you know, it's a 2008-2009 argument. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cudi was pretty big at the time and on the forefront of a new style of rap that was kind of controversial at the time.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'd originally thought we would both reveal our pick for 2018 at the end of the podcast. You said maybe not. And the more I think about it, I think you're right. I've put down a lot of different storylines because there were a lot of really interesting
stories. I know.
Can't wait to talk about that. I've also got some of my favorite songs from this past year. But I think you're right. If we start with both naming who our pick is, then we can go through the stories in the year, and then I think that will help us realize and kind of come bring it full circle towards the end. So if you're ready, I'm going to count to three, and on the count of three, we're both going to say our pick.
Let's do it.
2018. We are going to have the same pick.
Yeah.
There's part of me that wonders if maybe you're confident, because I do think there's a right pick.
There's
I
a right.
Also talk myself into
yes,
another one.
I can too. I totally agree with that too. And okay. The other one was my initial pick.
Yeah.
But it's like it's really undeniable once you talk through it.
I agree. All right, let's find out.
I shouldn't have clapped. That's going to show up on the
yeah,
mics.
I'm going to have to edit that out.
Oh, sorry guys.
Okay, let's do it. 1, 2, 3.
Cardi B.
Yeah. All right. I know it.
The reason I wondered is that I remember we had a conversation late last summer where we both were saying like, there's no way Pusha T doesn't take this year. And there's a part of me that still feels like I can have that conversation. But I mean, Cardi B was everywhere. And not only that, but like maybe the most universally liked and embraced.
Yeah.
Artist of the year.
And that's
year
part
in
of
general.
What this is. It's part of what this conversation is. And I think when we start to talk about a Travis Scott, a Pusha T, a Vince Staples, I think we're going to come back to similar ideas on like, oh, I can envision a world in which these guys would have won. But you're right. There's just no one who matched her influence. I actually do think there is one other person to match her influence and actually one other person who I thought initially. But Cardi B was just like, you think about consensus winners, and quality output. No one matched the flawlessness of the year that Cardi B had.
Yeah, no question about it. And just she had an awesome SNL performance. Was a, you know, someone on social media that people kind of like gravitated to and liked every time she made an appearance. It was fascinating. Even now, I mean, it's just kind of like she is now a staple figure in pop culture as a whole, let alone the hip hop community. And also she put out her debut album, Invasion of Privacy, and it was really fucking good.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, really from any angle I looked at it, Cardi B had to be, the winner here. Now, interestingly enough, and I put down my short list, I narrowed it down to four people, and you literally named the four people. I've got Cardi, Vince Staples, Pusha T, and Travis Scott.
Yeah. And I wanted, so I felt initially like you could make the argument that 2018 was Drake's year. Because one of the things that we've thought about for a really long time was, is Drake essential in rap music? Because it never felt like he really had ascended to the point where he was like the belt holder. Now that we've kind of looked back 10 years, we do find a year where Drake does fit. And 2018 felt to me like maybe this is the first year where Drake, we realized Drake's been making rap music for almost, putting out popular rap music for almost 10 years. He's almost indestructible. He had absolute PR disasters this year, and he was able to come out at the end of the year sort of with 2018 being on the win side, which is kind of remarkable.
Yeah.
But if you look at that compared to Cardi B, one, Cardi B's album was not more focused, but I think it was a little more consistent. I think she's more interested in making those kind of albums, and Drake's much more interested in the 90-minute exploration of different sounds.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I talked about Cardi, I was like, she was flawless. This was not a flawless year for Drake, and the way he handled, you know, some of the controversy, he had some difficult moments, and I think all of, you know, Cardi B certainly had a tumultuous 2018 as well, but it all, like, she just came out like the winner and everything, you know.
Yeah, it's, that isn't a really interesting point about Drake, because go back to like late spring when Pusha T drops that track on SoundCloud. I remember laying in bed that evening and seeing that come up and being like, oh my god, like, is Drake done? Like, is this, are we about to have a complete narrative shift on who Drake is? And by the end of the year, I mean, he'd recovered. I mean, just, I mean, it didn't even, it was an interesting moment, and I want to talk about that a little bit. That's definitely one of my big storylines of the year. But, you know, we had Nice for What listed as our top song of the year, you know, at the end of the year. Like, it could have been a moment that could have, like, shaken Drake and just kind of our view of Drake to the core, and yet still somehow he's in the discussion as like one of the most, you know, important and influential artists of the year. So it's fascinating.
He's a guy that was on Degrassi who sings in his rap songs. Like, there's so much about Drake that's so vulnerable, right? And he's often been ridiculed for views and, like, you know, some of his misfires on albums. But, like, yeah, just this was the year where it seemed like Drake's not going away. He keeps putting out quality. He has an interesting production relationship, and, you know, he's been near the top of the mountain. It's just, you know, this is about who stole the year, and we've often talked about great moments. Cardi B on SNL revealing her pregnancy, having that moment, and releasing a debut album that was near the top of many people's list. And that was kind of the whole thing. Like, can she put out a great album? Can she extend what happened in Bodak Yellow in 2017? Can she extend this into greatness for a whole another year? I'm so glad that that album kind of inherited Bodak Yellow, because it's sort of a great extension of that. And, like, the answer was yes.
Yeah, 100%. Let's talk about some of the storylines. And I've got some written down. I'm sure you've got some as well. To me, I've got, how many here? One, two, three. I've got six, but the top three storylines, and not in no particular order, but these are the top three storylines in hip hop for me. We'll see how you feel about it. One of the three is Pusha T and Drake.
Okay.
That's a top storyline. Another is Good Music, and kind of that run that we saw this summer and how complicated and confusing it was to process and work through it.
The Wyoming sessions.
Yeah.
Is that what we're calling it?
I mean, you know, there was that, you know, week after week, there was a 7-track album dropping.
Yeah.
Pusha T, Kanye, Nas,
Kids He Ghosts.
I mean, it was an interesting time. I would like to talk about that briefly. And then kind of the emo rap or SoundCloud rap, whatever you want to call it, thing. That was a big part of the year. And I think kind of the, not only the discussion about that in terms of art, but the discussion of it in terms of the people involved in it as well. I think that was kind of a fascinating moment. Now I've got a few other here I'll list off quickly. The Black Panther soundtrack.
Yes.
I still feel strongly about it. And I think that it's it was a big part of the year. And I think there's a lot of interesting things to talk about in terms of what it meant. Like, not only for that movie to have the success it did and be as good as it did, but for Kendrick Lamar to kind of lead that project.
Exactly.
And what it turned into. I think that's fascinating to think about that happened. I've got the Jay-Z Beyonce collaboration, because it was a moment that I think was really exciting when it happened. And we thought it was going to carry on, but it kind of just, I don't know, it just kind of faded a little bit for me, but we'll see how you feel. And then This Is America, with what happened with Donald Glover. So, I don't know, just spouting those off, what are your initial responses?
I feel like I need to go one by one, but
yeah,
I do think, starting with the Carters, I mean, that was it's a really fun listen. It's a good album. It's a 9-song, track list that powers a set list when they go on tour together. And it just felt like like the after party from an intervention. You know what I mean? They just had such tough, a tough public relationship history,
yeah,
and two really interesting albums, mm-hmm, not of equal influence, but they're both pretty engaging.
Yeah.
So those two kind of, you know, tough albums came out, and it was nice to see them come together
and
have a collaboration album. You know, it's, am I going to go back to that album and listen to it once a year? Maybe not. But yeah, man, it'd be fun to see those songs in concert. And Ape Shit was one of my top songs of the year.
It was a great song. I think what was interesting about it to me is when it dropped, it was this moment like, we've been waiting for this,
yeah,
for so long. Not only like have we been waiting for them to do an album together, but in light of everything that has come in recent years, this is a big deal. And I remember listening to it and liking it and thinking like, this is going to own the year. And then it just kind of didn't for me.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, like Lemonade and 444 are way more interesting.
They
so
are.
It's just kind of, it is what it is, and it's cool that we got it, but I think the story of what it could have been, or maybe what we all wanted it to be, and then it just being fine, you know?
Like, yeah, I think maybe the moment's passed for Jay-Z in terms of making that kind of album. It just felt more like catharsis to me than anything else, and so,
yeah,
but it was fun. And it made Obama's list.
Yeah, there you go. I didn't see his list this year. I always enjoy
Ape
looking
Shit
at that.
Was on one of his top songs for the
nice
year.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. How did he feel about Cardi B? Was she on the list?
I don't know if she made the list or not.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. That'd be a tough snob if that's
we're
going
to have to get him in
case
here and discuss that.
Kurt Vile made the list, so that was cool for some of my other, you know, music interests.
There you
interests.
Go.
Yeah.
This Is America. This was such an interesting moment because this is my hot take on it. I feel like I don't know if people feel this in general. Yeah, let's go ahead and do this. We've both
crack
finished
beer.
We've both finished one beer.
Let's crack it.
Here's beer number two.
Exciting audio.
Yeah, this is what you get when you listen to a podcast with us. So
that clean pour.
Mm,
yeah. You're saying This Is America.
This Is America. The reason that is on my list is because I don't think This Is America in and of itself is that interesting of a song. The video is obviously what turns it into something else. Just kind of the full experience of what that song became, and the fact that Donald Glover is the guy that pulled that off
exactly
makes perfect sense. And the cultural moment around that and the conversation around it when that video dropped after the SNL performance, I thought was like, it's undeniably one of the most interesting things that happened this
100%.
Year.
100%. I think, you know, we've looked back 10 years, Childish Gambino has never held the title belt.
Yep.
And I think it's probable that he never will. But if you think about Donald Glover as an artist, one of the great things that he does is he's a remarkable filmmaker, right?
Yeah.
And they figured out, I mean, This Is America was such an, it felt like an extension of Atlanta, right?
Yeah.
And if you think about all the artists that we talk about, we're not just talking about the music that they create,
mm-hmm,
the albums that they create. Part of, you know, consensus building and getting the title belt is having other exploiting other media,
yeah,
to produce results. And like this is America was one of the most interesting moments. And again, like, if he has a great album to back it up, then maybe we're talking about Childish Gambino as the winner,
well,
of the title belt.
I mean, my thing on that is I feel like he has had albums to to back it up. Because the internet is one of my favorite albums of this decade, but it came out at like at the end of 2013, like in December. So you couldn't really argue it as him having a hold on 2013. And then so much happened in 2014 that it made it difficult to like figure out where to place it. So,
and it was still a smaller album. Like, yeah. He is in a much different position now the music that he releases. He has so much more exposure and awareness for his music that it just didn't... It's remarkable even looking 5-6 years ago how much different that was when because the internet came out.
Yeah. It does feel funny that he hasn't been able to hold the title belt and the idea that we don't know if he can. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit more about that later, but And even I almost tried to talk myself into it for this year just because of things like Atlanta or being in the Han Solo movie. I mean, he was everywhere, right? But it was different than Cardi B to me. Yeah. And his musical output was so small this year that it was hard to make the argument. The Summer Pack EP I loved, but he wasn't rapping, which is fine. That's not like a criteria for this, but it was a weird year to try to figure out where to place him, I guess. Yeah. So, the Black Panther soundtrack, that came out early in 2018. I immediately was like, this is the album for this year. And it was a great album for the year. I think just culturally what it meant for Kendrick Lamar to lead that project and Ryan Coogler handling that movie. I mean, everything about that moment was just beautiful to watch. And the soundtrack, this was an interesting year because soundtracks kind of came back when you think about not only Black Panther, but... A Star Is Born, The Greatest Showman. There were a lot of soundtracks that really caught on, but the Black Panther soundtrack, to me, embodied the spirit of the moment the best of all of those.
Yeah.
I don't know how you felt about it or if it was an album you went back to very much this year.
I feel like I'm going to get emotional talking about this, but
okay.
One of the really powerful things about the Black Panther the soundtrack was this was Kendrick overseeing an album, mm-hmm. and I think one of the arguments you can make for Kendrick winning 2018 was the fact that he was involved with probably the biggest movie of the year,
mm-hmm.
and he brought so many artists that he's been championing for so long that have reached some level of success, but the Black Panther soundtrack and some of their output in 2018 and 2017 really elevated those artists. So when we think about Schoolboy Q, SZA, J-Rock, I mean, it was such a remarkable combination of so many people that Kendrick loves, and it was fun to see them succeeding on that level. Yeah. I, in particular, have always loved J-Rock and have always felt like there was some potential to unlock there. And sorry to go on a J-Rock tangent.
No, but it's all good.
J-Rock came out with a really excellent album. He was on he had some other good guest spots, and this is an odd comparison, but I've always felt like he was the Ali from St. Lunatics. Like, he's the Ali of Top Dog Entertainment.
Okay.
Which is, you and I both love Ali.
Yeah.
And we love his solo album. And I just feel like J-Rock never could, like, break through. He was always more interesting on Guest Versus and he wasn't creating his own content. And I just feel like this is the year that he broke through. And to see him, to bring it full circle on the Black Panther album is just like, man, Kendrick is so influential, even when he's building an album that's more of a collaboration than his own output. But yeah, Black Panther, what a great moment.
Yeah, that's incredible. I don't know how much more I can add to that, because that was a really cool kind of thing you shared there. So, no, I loved it. One thing I didn't mention here, I've got Lil Wayne on this list too. I liked the Carter Five.
I did too!
Okay,
did
well, too. Good. Let's talk about it then. It is very fun. And like the idea of, if we had gone back 1 year further before we started this, you know, or I guess 2 years, we would have given 2008 to Lil Wayne, obviously.
Yes.
And to think that at the time, it's been over a decade. It was a decade since Lil Wayne was like the greatest rapper alive. Right.
Yeah.
And his career since that moment has been so weird and odd and interesting, but not as satisfying as it was earlier than that, that it was hard to like figure out like what to do with him. And the Carter Five felt like the moment, like, yeah, it came too late probably, but it was a fun album. And it was fun to like have Lil Wayne like back in my life again in that way, I guess.
It seemed very self-aware to me, right?
Yeah,
it seemed kind of measured for the moment. And the wild thing is Lil Wayne's been in our lives for 20 years.
Yeah.
We've been listening to his music for literally 20 years. And I just felt like, I mean, Dedication was one of my top tracks for 2018. And I feel like this is so similar to what Jay-Z was doing in 2009 with the Blueprint 3. Yep. The only difference is so many other great albums came out in 2018 that Lil Wayne's obviously not the title belt winner for this year. But it felt like Lil Wayne looking back and looking upon a remarkable career and having all of these young and exciting artists celebrating with him.
Yeah.
And I felt like that's where the self-awareness comes in. And that's why the Cardify was so exciting
yeah,
for me.
For sure. It definitely was an album that felt like it lasted through the full year. And I didn't see a lot of people talking about it at the end of the year, but it really is good. And
it is.
It's just, it was fun to see that. Emo rap. This one I've got some thoughts on. And when we say this, we're talking about the, you know, XXXTentacion, you know, Juice WRLD, Lil Peep. It was a thing this year. It kind of dominated the radio. This one is interesting for me because, I mean, and we can talk about, like, a guy like XXXTentacion. I hope I'm saying that right.
Yeah.
I've never heard it said out loud, but, like, Problematic, but also died this past year.
Yeah.
Like, and the kind of conversations that brought about of, like, you know, the power that he held with like his audience and what that music meant to them, while also grappling with like domestic violence and like this guy kind of sucks. And then also like, geez, he died in a really dark way as well. There's just a lot there to process. But if we're looking at the genre as a whole, I was mentioned to you briefly before we started that emo rap is not a new thing. So, you know, I have talked extensively about my love for like underground hip hop, especially, you know, from the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. Emo rap was a thing back then. And, you know, people have heard me talk about Pigeon John on this podcast. We've had him on the podcast.
Right.
This was a guy that was kind of a part of that, like a guy that was like singing sometimes and rapping, and the lyrics were kind of emotive and emotional. And, you know, you had all kinds of people like Slug and Atmosphere and Eli and Grouch. Like there was a whole undercurrent of like emo rap in the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s in the underground scene that was written off because like, well, you don't sing in rap songs. And what I've always found fascinating, we've talked about 808s and Heartbreak and Drake and what came after that, it opened the door for that to be okay,
right,
and turn into a thing. It's led to this moment that we're having right now, but the true genesis of it lies quite a ways back, and a lot of artists that people probably don't know the names of.
Sure.
So in one way, it's been interesting to watch it happen and be accepted now, while also thinking like, man, I wish people would have been into this like back in like 99 or 2000, because there was some really great artists, and if you would like to go explore them, you definitely can. But it's, I don't know. What was your take on it this year? Because we haven't talked a lot about it, like between the two of us. And I don't think like, you know, I enjoyed Juice WRLD this year.
Yeah,
I mean, it was fun.
Me too.
But I mean, like, it wasn't something I was considering at the end of the year or anything.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like it's a new iteration of an old story. We've been through this before. We had the conversation about singing rappers in 2008. We've been through the controversies like skinny jean rappers and backpack rap, and like every anytime there's some sort of new deviation from the rap norm, it creates some level of controversy just because it's popular on the radio. But when you think about whether or not this is a fad, I mean, the reality is someone like Juice WRLD is going to continue most likely to make really interesting music and different sort of types of music,
yeah,
and like great artists are going to survive. So I just feel like we've, you know, one of the things when we talk about these lists, like we're now in our 30s and
yep,
we do seem like we're 100 years old when we talk about these things. But like, you know, I just feel like we've seen this before and great artists survive.
Yeah, definitely. And that is a thing, you know, kind of the age factor of like,
yeah,
we're not the target demographic here.
But it's exciting, I think, you
yeah
know, because it
well,
does,
I mean,
like, a lot of good music's being made and, you know, I don't know, emo rap and a lot, you know, a lot's coming from Spotify playlist culture and like rap caviar on this stuff. And I feel like
yeah
that's really where the genre has shifted, and it's cool to see a lot of stuff bubble up from that.
Yeah, for sure. And who knows, maybe somebody from that list will be on the, you know, in contention for the title belt next year.
Or we'll just give it to Jay-Z, you know?
good music. This one...
Oh, there's so much to unpack here.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack. That's a whole podcast itself, which I don't really want to do.
Yeah, but, it's not a podcast, more of a therapy session.
People know you on this podcast, I think, best for our conversations about Kanye, right. Which are going to be less frequent, likely, going forward. You know, who knows?
Yeah.
This was not a great year for Kanye, but it's undeniable to talk about what happened in the middle of this year with good music. And, you know, Pusha T, Daytona, that was one of our best albums of the year. That's All Dead. It's an album that I loved. Kids See Ghost was really interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of...
And what we've been waiting for. It delivered on the promise that we expected.
When you think back to this summer and all the things that you were feeling when, like, Ye dropped and Daytona dropped and Kids See Ghost and, like, everything that was happening, it was hard because it was, like, there was a lot of... For me, it was a lot of hard feelings and then trying to take in the music in light of all of that, of everything else that was happening outside of the music. It was difficult for me. Daytona's really the only one that stuck with me all the way through the end of the year. I don't know. When you think back to June... You know, as these were coming out, how do you reflect on it at this point?
It felt so similar to Good Fridays, and the idea is like, this is how life is. Moments really can't be replicated, and there was so much baggage around this mm-hmm. that I'm so glad that we got Daytona, and I'm so glad that we were able to, you know, we didn't give Pusha T the title belt, but this feels like such a reaffirmation of everything that he's done with his career. It was so fun to have that, so I'm just glad we had that. Kids See Ghost was a really fun listen. I really haven't revisited it much since it came out. I was just giving it, you know, some spins, and then I've kind of put it away just because it sucks to listen to Kanye's music now.
Yeah.
Even if Cuddy's on the tracks or not. So overall, it just like, it was exhausting. But I'm just like, I'm so glad we got Daytona, you know?
Yeah.
Pusha T filled the spot that we've talked about in the last couple of years. Last year was kind of Jay-Z with 444. The year before, we talked about Q-Tip, of just like the Professor Emeritus winner as opposed to the title belt holder.
Yeah.
And Pusha T for me just held that spot.
Yeah. And the reason he was in the title belt conversation for me, this is a guy who's been in my life since, you know, 2002 or whenever Lord Willin came out. I mean, he's been one of my favorite rappers for a long time. And to see him get to have a moment just as a... Like, rap as an art form. That's what Daytona is for me. It's like 7 tracks. It's like the exact right amount of, like, Pusha T being a great rapper. And Kanye's production on Daytona is something worthy of praise. It was really good. It was a moment for me that was fun and great. And it just reminded me, like, how much I love Pusha T as an artist. So speaking of Pusha T, as I mentioned... Pusha T and Drake, we've talked about it a little bit already, but was that the biggest storyline in hip hop this year, of what that was and what we thought it might be? Or, I mean, what, I don't know, what's your take on it?
Certainly the biggest storyline was the ongoing feud with Good Music Artist and Drake, right? Mm-hmm. And I think obviously the Pusha T diss track was one of the most compelling things we saw.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting because we haven't had a true rap beef in a while. I mean, we've had Meek Mill and Drake, and there's been stuff. This one felt like there were stakes, I guess, and I hadn't felt that in a while.
I mean, since Hit 'Em Up, has there been a more cutting diss track than what Pusha T did this year?
It was crazy. Where were you when that dropped?
I was sitting outside listening with my girlfriend. We were outside pulling up the track, and I was like, oh no, this is... This is a whole nother thing.
Yeah.
I just felt, I think I started sweating.
I mean, everything from like the artwork to the going after, know. Like, hey, you're hiding a child. Like,
I feel uncomfortable just talking about it now, you know?
So, but it's over now. Like, it's just kind of like, I mean, it's probably not over, but like, it's clear.
How do you ever get over that?
Yeah. I mean, but what did it change for you ultimately? Like, what about it? I don't know, sticks with you even now or will stick with you going forward.
All that matters is what it did to Pusha T's career. I mean, one of the mm-hmm. things we've kind of landed on is like, this really had very little impact on Drake's, right? And that's kind of the exciting thing about Drake, but it's just a reminder that Pusha T throws 100 miles an hour and, you know, he comes from a different era of rap, and it was... fun's the wrong word because there's a lot of problematic things with that diss track, but Pusha T can rap, and he has a style, and for all the issues that you might have with that track, let's be honest, it was kind of fun to see him do his thing, yeah. Right?
Well, that I guess that is kind of interesting in that, you know, I've got, like, some friends at work, like, you know, younger, and they're really into Drake. I wouldn't have been able to have a conversation with them about Pusha T had it not been for everything that happened this year. And that really, he really was the one that benefited most from everything that happened with that.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I'm fine with it. I thought it was, yeah, it was just kind of a, it was a fascinating moment. And again, you know, both of us remember a time where there were real stakes involved with rap beefs. And fortunately, we've kind of hopefully exited a time of like where those stakes are like at a, you know, your life level.
Right.
But I don't know. What were you going to say?
I just don't know that there's ever been a rap beef that involved this much investigative reporting.
Yeah. You know,
like it's typically like firsthand witness accounts.
Yeah.
And pretty surface level stuff. This was like, I have the internet, and I'm good at researching things. Yeah. I mean, it was kind of wild.
It's kind of the perfect 2018 rap beef,
yeah.
To be honest. So, interesting stuff. Do you have any other storylines from the year that you were wanting to bring up? Or
I love this kind of dives into my favorite songs, but, you know, when we were talking about Chance winning the title belt, we just kept going back to the idea that Chance makes music that you can just feel like you can rejoice to. Mm-hmm. And I love that Chance, the music that he released this year was like Dave Chappelle sketches when it's like the player haters ball. Like he was so angry and just putting up middle fingers. Like mm-hmm. I love that. I love what Chance did this year. One of the, you know, we kind of expected an album. We were talking about at the beginning of 2018. We didn't get an album, but man, did we get some great output. And it's a reminder that like Chance the Rapper is accumulating power in a way that is so interesting and exciting. He just gave $400,000 to a Chicago mayoral candidate. He bought the Chicagoists. You know, he continues to have, you know, I was just at a Chicago comedy show not too long ago. And at the end, you know, they were playing Chance songs. It's like he has a hold on the city that we all kind of expected, like, Kanye to be sort of, you know, the Chicago rapper forever. And it's like, Chance has usurped him in that way.
Oh, for
and
sure.
Chance, you know, even without putting out an album, man, did he have a lot to say.
Definitely. And I think we're going to have a bigger conversation about him next year, for sure. But yeah, you're right. What he's meant to that city and what his voice has meant has been fascinating. Now, it's going to be interesting if that Chance and Kanye, like, collaboration album actually is a real thing.
Yeah,
I think we're gonna have to figure out that next year. But
we've been in a situation before where Kanye has latched onto a more well liked artist to create a duo album and kind of rehab his character. I don't know if it's possible to do at this point, but if anyone can do it, it's Chance. And I might need security was one of my, maybe my favorite track of the year. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite tracks. And just like, what is a more ambitious track than a song that, eulogizes Vern Troyer, calls for the resignation for Rahm Emanuel, and cites a major media acquisition. Like, my gosh, what an ambitious track.
That is a good argument. Speaking of tracks, I mean, do you want to just list off some of our favorite tracks from this year?
Yeah.
I've written down a few that just kind of like came off the top of my head. And a couple of these were listed in our end of the year list for It's All Dead. But first thing I put down was If You Know, You Know by Pusha T. I was out running the morning that album dropped and heard that while I was out on my run and was like, oh shit. And it's just such a fascinating song. And I love a lot of songs on Daytona. Hard Piano is another one that I liked. And I don't know if a lot of people did. But If You Know, You Know, it's just kind of like classic Pusha T. Sicko Mode, it was impossible to escape that song.
That's on my list as well.
Travis Scott, I really loved. I had him on my short list. We haven't talked about him a lot, but I'm a big fan of his.
And one of the things I wonder is, like, if I was 20 or 21 years old, I wonder if I would just be handing the belt to Travis Scott. Because I love that music. It's very, like, you know, I mean, he's at the center of, like, mosh pit culture now.
Right.
And, I mean, it's Travis Scott is such a fun hang. And so, intentionally, like, he named his album after a theme park, right?
Yeah.
And it feels like that. Like, he's trying to create, like, fun, engaging music that people can party to. And, man, does it land. And, man, can he rap.
Yeah. And by the way, he's coming to Indianapolis in March. So
let's go.
Just throwing that out. Yeah, you want to?
Let's go. All right,
let's do it. It'd be like a redo of the Yeezus, or not the Yeezus, the Life of Pablo.
The Pablo, I know. So how weird is it that that was like one of my first introductions to Travis Scott was when he was on the floor at the Pablo concert, mm-hmm. like trying to start a mosh pit.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Interesting. Feels Like Summer by Vince Staples. I didn't hear a lot of people talking about this song. Everybody, the song I saw listed most often at the end of the year was Fun, which is
yeah,
a great track. But Feels Like Summer, goddamn, dude. Like, that track sets the tone for that Vince Staples album, which I love. And Vince Staples, we've got to talk about him as the title belt holder. One at some point, we've got to figure out how to talk about him, because what he's doing is fascinating.
But how does he break through? Because here's a guy who consistently has had three great albums that we all love. We love to listen to him. I mean, he's this remarkable Twitter personality. Yeah. He was the best guest on Bill Simmons' show. I almost wonder if that show would have gone on, if that would have allowed Vince Staples, like, a massive platform to increase, you know, his reach. But, you know, he does strike a specific tone, and he kind of he's really interesting to listen to, and just almost doesn't have those kind of like pop breakthroughs that like Cardi B has.
Yeah.
But this guy consistently puts out albums. I mean, if you put it like Don't Get Chip, Feels Like Summer, Run the Bands, and Fun, you give me those four songs and I'll go against anything that was put out this year.
I mean, it's so subversive as well. I think it's Ty Dolla Sign on the chorus of Feels Like Summer.
Yeah.
And it just feels like such a pleasing summer track. And then you listen to it and you're like, shit, man. Like, this is real.
This guy's like the David Lynch of rap. Like, he is really subverting expectations. And he's clever. And he's funny. And goddamn, is he dark.
Yeah.
And it's I've very rarely have I ever put on a Vince Staples album and not listen to the entire album. Like, that's how I engage with Vince Staples music. You'd feel like you're jumping into a tone that is so consistent and fun.
Yeah. My favorite track this year, and overall, not just hip hop, but my favorite song of the year, and it landed at number one on our list, was Nice for What. I thought that what Drake did with that track, with the music video, like, it was just kind of the, you know, hip hop has a long history of, you know, misogyny to deal with. I think where what Drake did with that song, and of course the Lauryn Hill sample and that song turning 20, Miseducation of Lauryn Hill turning 20, it was just kind of a great moment.
Can I build one on top of that? Because I really felt like it was so hard to pick like one Cardi B song, but I feel like Bickenhead was, you know, it takes the 3-6 Mafia sample, it kind of inverts it, and it's like an interesting, it's a way of, you know, taking something that's very misogynistic and showing, like, turning it into an empowerment, a kind of like, you know, Nice for What does and I think in a less interesting way, but Nice for What was a remarkable song. But that was really, it was really fun to see someone also take another track from the late 90s, early 2000s, and turn it into something new.
Yeah, the Cardi B song that I have on here is probably too easy of a pick, but Be Careful is just the song that stuck with me all year. And
that's like the consensus pick, right, for a Cardi B track.
My last song that I listed here that I want to talk about, we talked about Lil Wayne a little bit, but Let It Fly, the track he did with Travis Scott that's on the start of the Carter Five. I just love that song.
It's a great song.
I listened to it so much this year. And I could not list it here, but yeah, it's such a, that to me was just kind of like, oh man, I remember really enjoying listening to Lil Wayne. That's what that song made me feel. And so it's a track that kind of stuck with me all year long.
Yeah, I feel like we've gone through most of the ones I had. I mean, I Might Need Security, Bickenhead. I loved Get Up 10, Cardi B's intro track, because it was almost like, you know, she in so many ways reminds me of Jay-Z on Reasonable Doubt or the beginning of Eminem's career, where it's like she has a fascinating origin story, but the difference is Cardi B was already famous, right?
Yeah.
And it was always this conversation of like, is this a gimmick? Can she turn this into a great album, or can she turn this into consistency? And Get Up 10 was like, let's strip everything away. Let's make this like a 90s Nas track, and let's make me the focus, and let me show you how interesting I can be. And to kick off the album that way, and what follows is so much fun and so interesting, and so, you know, sort of the spectrum of emotions. But to start off that album with Get Up 10 was like a pretty fresh announcement, and I love that as one of my favorite tracks of the year.
Yeah, I agree.
I think I also put on Nonstop by Drake. To me, that's just like Drake can rap, and there's a great production and a great sample, and I kind of find myself listening more to that than Nice for What. Both are really great pop tracks, and it's just fun that, like, you know, he can sound like a Southern rapper even though he's from Canada.
Yeah. You know? Well, I mean, it's funny, like, you talked briefly about, you know, Drake being somebody to consider for the title belt this year, but I wasn't a huge fan of Scorpion, but I love Nice for What. We haven't even mentioned In My Feelings, which is probably the consensus pick
exactly. So, like,
there's just a lot. There's a lot there. So.
In My Feelings, that was maybe one of the biggest moments. It's certainly in the top five. As the mummification of that song was massive.
Yeah.
And, like, that's the thing is, like, Drake's not interested in making the album that you want. Drake is interested in making all the things that he wants to put out, and then you're going to find the gems from that.
Yeah, 100%. Let's talk a little bit about 2019. We're, you know, a couple weeks into the new year. I feel like we always kind of, like, try to predict, like, you know, who might hold the title belt in the new year. We mentioned Cardi B kind of offhand at the 2017 one, but I don't know, like, if I knew how it was going to play out. I definitely feel like I didn't know for sure, like, that, oh, she's going to have a real chance of holding the title belt. I want to throw out Childish Gambino, and it's been a year and a half since he was at Governor's Ball and said that the final Childish Gambino album was in the works. We listed it as the number one most anticipated album of the year for It's All Dead for this year. And I don't know. I feel like there's a chance that at some point we're going to mention Donald Glover in this conversation, and it could be 2019.
So do you think we'll get a Chance album or a Kendrick Lamar album in 2019?
Oh, for sure. It's totally possible. But I'm throwing out Childish Gambino first because I want it to happen.
Yeah, I'll be surprised if it does. You know, just doesn't seem like he's ever broken through like that. So
okay. All right. So clearly Kendrick is on your mind, Chance is on your mind for 2019. Are those kind of your top two potential contenders?
Sure. I don't know if I look at anyone else and say they're a clear-cut, you know, competitor for the title belt. Who knows? You know, there are so many great albums that came out in 2018, so many contenders for the title belt. You know, it might just be one of those years where, like, there's not the same amount of output, you know?
Yeah. Let's think about some other things that might happen. Run the Jewels.
What a weird year for Run the Jewels, you know? Think about how much change for Killer Mike in a way that is not comparable to what happened to Kanye in terms of its scale. But, I mean, they were batting 1,000, and now they're in a weird position.
Yeah, is there coming back from that? Is it possible?
You know, he still has, he's still been one of the most interesting and important voices going back 10 years. You know, his last 10 years of the things that he's had to say doesn't negate some of the more problematic things he's had to say. Yeah. And, you know, Killer Mike's interested in the dialogue, and he's interested in having conversations, and he's not going to shy away from making some mistakes. And I think he's self-aware in a way that some of the other more problematic rap artists that we have just aren't. And I think that, you know, yeah, my answer is yes, he can come back for that.
Vince Staples, I feel like FM was short enough that it could be like a one-off project with another full length to come. But I think we've already kind of talked about, like, You know,
don't see her out.
Yeah. It's hard to figure out what path he has to kind of take that role.
I'm much more confident at the end of 2019 or the end of 2020, we're going to be saying Travis Scott is the title belt holder than I am at Vince Staples, even though those two both are consistently putting out great stuff. It's just like Travis Scott breaks through somehow. Maybe it's his aesthetic or, you know, his relationship to good music. Somehow he's able to reach a larger audience than Vince Staples, and it's not just based on pure talent.
Yeah. I'm going to throw this out. I've thrown it out before on this podcast. Are we ever going to be able to have a conversation about Future in this context?
No.
Okay. Well, that settles that. No, I mean, he's been in the conversation, right? He's right there on the cusp. I mean, he's consistently putting out music. I like him. I don't know.
No, I do like him too. I've always liked him. And he puts out good stuff. He's a really interesting collaborator. But no, he's not. No.
There's just not that cultural component that, like, oh, everybody's talking about Future right now.
When does Future make a song that no one else could make? You know, like, I mean, he certainly has a distinct vocal style, and he can do that, but no.
Okay. All right. Well, that settles that. Kendrick Lamar, is he putting out an album in 2019?
If he does, man, it's going to be hard to not give him the title belt.
Yeah.
He's still there every single year he does something significant.
I've said recently that this three-album streak of Good Kid, Mad City, To Pimp a Butterfly, and Damn is the best consecutive three albums. You can argue these as the best set of consecutive three albums of anybody all time. Yeah, I mean, do you feel that way?
Yeah.
I mean,
I do.
So at what point does Kendrick not surpass our expectations? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's got to happen eventually. But like,
and he doesn't fuck anything up. So, like, you know, that's, you know, I don't know. Where's the Kendrick controversy? If anything, it's just like his career is going to stagnate with the lack of interesting things that happen in his life outside of rap music, you know?
Yeah.
But he continues to find a way in to dominate the culture conversation. There's such an argument for him to be the title belt winner of 2018. I mean, he's not, but like,
yeah,
damn, he really made an effort in 2018 and didn't even release a solo album.
100%. Who else are we missing? Who else have I not mentioned that I should have?
I mean, is YG going to win our title belt? No. Is Action Bronson, who put out an interesting album this year, going to win the title belt? Probably not, even though he's one of those guys where he's found a television outlet and he's found a way to make himself interesting like in so many different ways. But, you know, this comes down to, like, I keep saying the same thing over and over again, but it is consensus building, and we are talking about popular entertainment. And, you know, with the nicheification of rap music and with there not being as many dominant cultural conversations, there's just a couple of people who are going to be considered.
Yeah. I feel like we always talk about, like, there's dark horses that come out of nowhere, and that does happen, but usually you feel it coming.
Chance was that way, though. We really did not. I did not expect Chance to win the year that he won.
Right. Yeah,
I didn't expect Cardi to win this year. Certainly, she was on the periphery, and we talked about her last year as a possible winner for this year.
Yeah.
But it was like, did we really expect that album to be as good as we did?
Right.
No, we didn't. We would be lying if we said we thought that a year ago.
Yeah. Let me throw another name at you. Vanessa Carlton.
Yeah. I think if anyone is just like right there, ready to take it.
Yeah. Good stuff. I don't know. Does that kind of wrap up 2018 and hip hop and looking ahead? Is there anything else you want to discuss? Anything we've missed?
Well, this is the year, and I won't harp on it because we've talked about it ad nauseum, but this is the year we like put away Kanye and he lost his relevance. And Rolling Stone did a really interesting piece where they were like, which is something that I don't say often, but they compared to Kanye to Lil Wayne. It was like both of their eras kind of came to an end in 2018. And Lil Wayne did it in a very self-aware, interesting way that was very celebratory and inclusive, and Kanye just alienated most of his fans. Yeah. And there's obviously no coming back from that. Even if he does a great album with Chance, like that's always that baggage will always be around him. And I think that was unfortunately that was probably the most significant thing that happened in 2018.
Yeah,
especially as longtime fans, and it colors his music in an odd way looking back, but it is what it is, you know?
One of the things that sticks out in my mind from this past year, so you and I have taken on the annual tradition of taking a baseball trip to visit a new stadium. Somewhere between Chicago and, you know, Minneapolis, Minnesota, as we're looking for a gas station, on this playlist I put together, Can't Tell Me Nothing comes on, and I was talking with you about, man, this is so hard to, like, figure this out, and you were like, you know what? This song meant something to me when it came out, and there's nothing Kanye can do to take that away from me.
Right.
Kind of like how I feel about The College Dropout and what that album meant to me. Like, we've had a lot of great Kanye conversations, and he put out some great music, and those moments did happen. Now, does that mean that we're going to listen to Kanye as much going forward, or that we're going to have all these interesting conversations about Kanye anymore? No, they're probably done, but they happened, and we had them, and I think, for me, just finding ways to remember that and kind of the good memories of that is probably as good as I can do, and I can live with that, I guess.
And he helped give us something great with Cudi and something great with Pusha T, which we've been wanting that for a long time.
Yeah. So, That's that.
So who is your, if you have to guess right now, who is your pick for 2019? Do you think it'll be Childish Gambino?
That's my pick.
My pick is Chance the Rapper. So okay. We'll see a year from now how this turns out.
We'll see what happens. Before we finish up, I got to put you on the spot. Where's Manny Machado going to land and where's Bryce Harper going to land?
I'm going to go with the obvious picks. I think Machado ends up figuring something out with the White Sox, something closer to 8 to 10 years and not 7 years, something in between that. I think it's going to be a pretty low mark for Machado, and I think Bryce Harper ends up going back to the Nationals.
All right.
I think that the Phillies are going to scare the Nationals. I think if the Phillies weren't in the same division, they might be a different thing, but the Nationals are going to buckle.
You know, I think the Rays bring Manny Machado into the fold, and I think, you know, Derek Jeter finds out a way to get Bryce Harper to the Marlins. So,
the obvious pick, the Childish Gambino of baseball.
Man, so we made it through this podcast without one mention of Keith Olbermann. We should have had a running joke this
I know.
Year. That was so fun, but shout out to Keith Olbermann. You know, we hope to hear from you on your pick for the title belt for 2018. Who knew rap music could be so good? That's going to do it. Brock Benefield, thank you for joining me. I appreciate it, as always.
What a fun yearly tradition this has turned out to be.
Yeah, this is fantastic. That's going to do it. If you like what you heard on this podcast or any of our other podcasts, please find a way to subscribe. We are on iTunes, on Spotify, on your favorite podcast app. And please leave us a review. Let us know how we're doing, what you like about the show, and what you would like to see. That's going to do it. Please visit itsalldead.com. Until next time, I'm Kyle Hawk, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the It's All Dead podcast. If you like what you heard, be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app. Then visit us at itsalldead.com for the latest music news, reviews, and much more.